This podcast brought to you by Hope 103.2.
On Hope 103.2, joining us, Gladys Staines, the movie The Least of These, sharing her and her husband Graham's story on the big screen. Gladys, thank you for being on the show.
Oh, thank you, Laura. It's lovely to be with you.
Your story is a really profound one. It's inspiring, it's tragic and hopeful, so it's very important that it's told right. What made you say yes to seeing it turned into a movie?
It took a long time to say yes. I guess because they said that they were going to do it about forgiveness. Forgiveness comes out in it toward the end, maybe not, yeah. But Andrew Matthews sent me the script and I looked through it and he said it's not a documentary. It's drama, I suppose. But part of when I said yes, I said, well, I want to have input into the accuracy of things that relate to the family. And so I did have input into that. And that was the only reason I said yes, is as long as I could have input into it. For a long time, I actually thought, oh, why am I doing this? And because it caused me a great deal of stress. But once I saw the finished product, I thought they'd done a really good job of it.
Because they wanted to honour the story. And having your input, I think, gives it a touch of authenticity that it probably wouldn't have had otherwise. And we learn a lot about what you and your family decided to do in India, working with communities who are affected by leprosy. And you and Graham both made the choice to move to India independently of each other before you actually met there. So why did you personally decide to go to India in the first place?
Well, I knew God wanted me on the mission field from the time I was about 18, having been brought up in a Christian family, and also used to get lots of missionary biographies as our Sunday school prizes at the end of the year. Mum also had she prayed for missionaries. And so from 18, I believe, I went forward at a convention about mission, and, you know, it was like God, even though no one else followed me up, God did. Mm. And I was interested in a couple of places, and then eventually I heard about OM, or Operation Mobilisation, being a training organisation, and I thought, oh, that'd be good to go with that, because then I'm not sort of responsible for everything, and being in a training thing, I'm under other people. But that led me to India. At that point, I mean, as a nurse, I was interested in leprosy, but I didn't go straight there, and I actually met Graham when I was in OM, and we'd sort of met casually anyway, we couldn't sort of have conversation or anything because of the rules related to boy-girl relationships in OM. Mind you, we were men, women by that stage, but that was fine. When I was in the Moyabunj district with Operation Mobilisation, as we were leaving, I said, I really want to go and see the leprosy home, because I'd heard about the leprosy work, you know, for years, and Graham graciously stopped his afternoon sleep, the siesta, and took us out as a team, and yeah, I followed him around like a little puppy dog.
What was it that originally attracted you to him?
Well, I didn't know that he was, I mean, I had no idea he was another missionary. I didn't know that he was interested in me, but of course, well, what attracts anyone to anyone? Well, to start with, he was a missionary, you know. When I was 18, after God really, I felt calling me to the mission field, I knew that would affect my marriage, who I was going to marry. It had to be someone who also had a call into the mission field overseas, and that was my specific. Even though I'd gone out with a couple of other people before that, they didn't fit the bill.
Mm-hmm.
So when I first met Graham, and finding out eventually he was single, and I mean, I was 30 by that stage, he was 40. Yeah, something started working there, and the rest of the girls on the team observed a few things, and and I would sit there trying to do a Bible study with the team, like about six or seven girls, and I was the leader, doing a Bible study, and my mind would wander.
There you go. Yeah. It was meant to be, right from the beginning.
Well, God arranged it, so. Yeah, in fact, he after I left that area, he wrote to the leaders of OM and asked for permission to write to me. So they wrote to me and said that Graham had written and asked for permission to write. And I had to pray and fast for 3 days to see if this is what God wanted.
Yeah, you do have to be wise with all of those kind of things. And together as a couple and then as a family, you did great work with the leper colonies, who are very sort of heavily frowned upon in India. The way they perceive leprosy is quite different. How did you deal with the stigma associated with leprosy and just caring for people and showing them love?
Well, it wasn't all that difficult to me. But just let me go back for a minute. I mean, a lot of people think that we started the leprosy home. Well, we didn't. It's been going since about 1897 or something, the work of the missionaries with leprosy. Mm. I just put that in just to clarify. So Graham was one of the, you know, a line of succession of people who had, you know, caring for people with leprosy. Now, just to also clarify, I wasn't so involved with the leprosy, caring for them, because of the visa restrictions I had at the time. But I was able to help Graham in the background of doing lots of things, managing the household, ordering medicines, doing accounts and stuff like that, and caring for Rachel, mm-hmm. of course, yeah. As far as the leprosy, you know, the stigma of leprosy, well, I guess Graham was very strong on this. You know, leprosy is a disease like anything else, and certainly in latter years it's completely curable. If, however, you have deformities, it doesn't, you know, you can't take those away. Mm. But Graham was really, like anyone who works in leprosy, very particular that it's a disease and it's not something to be afraid of, just go and get treatment. And even the Indian government, when I was there, they did a big campaign to try and reduce the stigma of leprosy and say that, no, you should let your sons and daughters marry someone from a leprosy family. They don't have it. It's not genetic. It's, yeah.
It's really positive that they were able to start to make some of those changes, and that the government actually get involved as well is really encouraging to see. One of the other things that we learn from the least of these is the experience of Christians living in somewhere like India. And yeah. It looks like there's quite a lot of persecution that occurs. And of course, that's what happened to Graham and to your sons in such a tragic way. What is the experience like for Christians living in India?
Well, it can be very difficult at times. Like, even before Graham, I don't know exactly what it is now, but it's still not, it's getting worse. I mean, even sometimes now, even if you just go to a prayer meeting, you get accused of converting. But, like, before Graham and the boys were killed, my family were killed, there were people who, right from the beginning in Moyabunj district where we lived, as people came to Christ, and, you know, they often faced persecution from the village people. Like, they weren't allowed to pull water from the village well, which was the source of water, because they might contaminate the well, just as a Christian, which we know is not true. And some people had their chickens, and crops are their source of income, so sometimes their crops got destroyed, sometimes the chickens got destroyed. Bicycles stolen, and there were even two or three people that I'm aware of, even in the time that I was there, who had their children killed because of their faith.
Wow.
There was one widow lady who'd come to Christ, and her son was out herding the cattle with all the village boys, climbed up a tree to have a look where the cattle were, and then the village boys got a sharpened stick and poked it in a very sensitive place, and he died. And there was another young boy who went to school, and as they, you know, stop at the local pond to cool off, and the other boys got stones and threw stones at him, so he couldn't get out, so he drowned.
Wow. Hearing those stories, it's something that you think will never happen to you. You know, even if you do choose to live in India, you just think, wow, there's something about us, I think, that sort of makes ourselves believe it can happen, but we're immune from it happening to us. How did it affect your faith when you realised that, wow, you weren't immune from something like that and even worse than that happening to you?
Well, it certainly didn't turn me away from the Lord in any way. I guess in a sense I did think we were immune. I mean, when there had been persecution breakout in, like, the Christmas before over in the state of Gujarat, which is right on the other side of India, churches burned. To my knowledge, there wasn't any Christians killed, but the churches burned on Christmas Day, and then there were other things happening in our state. And I sort of just think, oh, you know, that happens to everyone else, not expecting it to happen to us. But it just brings home the reality that just because we're foreigners, you know, strange land, it doesn't stop you from things happening. But, of course, the nation of India was very shocked at what happened. But I guess ours became, because we weren't Indians, because we were foreigners, you know, it became a huge thing, and especially mm-hmm. the children were killed. But, you know, many people in India have said it brought shame on India, that mm. a tolerant country, who would allow that to happen? But I guess what I find encouraging is that even through their deaths, many people have come to Christ. And mm. and also, you know, a lot of the Indian Christians said, well, why aren't we telling our own people about it? Why aren't we doing yeah. our own missionary work? Why do we have to have foreigners come? And so,
It's unfortunately like one of those realities that you mention. And amazingly, in the movie, we see a scene where the forgiveness that you did show to the attackers, that's demonstrated amazingly. There's a lot of people that would feel like there's nothing worse they could imagine than losing their family. What would your advice be to people who are processing tragedy and dealing with grief now in ways that they can forgive, in ways that they can walk through that grief well?
I mean, for me, as a Christian, as a believer in Christ, I sort of clung to him. I guess initially I said I'd forgiven, and I didn't understand the complexity of it all. I didn't think through it all. But the fact that I had actually stated I'd forgiven, people asked, are you angry? And I said, well, no, I'm not angry, but I'm upset and I've forgiven. But then, you know, if we forgive, then we don't have bitterness. But I think every person's tragedy is different. I've certainly had thousands of people around the world praying for me, or Esther also. Mm. But if you're a follower of Christ, you know, if you're a Christian, certainly get other people to help you, pray with you. But we need to understand people who try to understand people who've gone through tragedy also, because sometimes we as those who haven't been through it. Well, I have been through it, but we don't know how to talk to the people. Well, even I find that difficult sometimes. But, yeah, I don't have a real shortcut answer on that.
No, that's all right. I think your perspective is still really fascinating, because one of the things I'm aware of with your story is that you've continually had to talk about it, and you've continually had to go back to this event that was a number of years ago but is obviously very well known around the world and still shapes so much of what people take away from your story and your life. Do you feel like speaking about it has helped you move forward, or do you actually feel like there's a day you'd love to end this chapter in a way and be able to move forward fully?
Well, what does move forward mean anyway? I sometimes wonder. There are days that I would like to just end that public sort of thing. And I mean, for a while I pulled back from speaking. I pulled back from doing a lot of stuff. It's a process stuff. But, you know, I've found that since the movie's been released, as hard as the process was to get that done and to... not to get it done, but, you know, the whole legal process of it, and to make sure that anything related to our family was accurate. Yeah, it's not been an easy thing at all. In fact, it's been very hard. But, I mean, sometimes you want to close the chapter, but in reality you can't, because, you know, I had my husband and two children. But I realised that since the movie's come out, I've actually had more opportunities to talk to people. Because as I talk to people, and, you know, sometimes you're on a plane or somewhere and conversation comes up that, you know, I lived in India, and since the movie's come out, I've sort of pointed them to that. And it's been more positive, the release of the movie, for me, than I thought it was going to be.
That's good.
Which is why I've been willing to talk about it.
It sounds like, so long as you can share your faith with somebody and that they can make that connection, it makes it all really worthwhile in a way.
Well, it does. I know there's a lot of people going to be in heaven because they said, I've heard of someone who said, well, who's that God that Gladys has faith in, because I want to know that God.
Wow.
And, you know, the message of forgiveness. And even back here in Australia, there was a 90-year-old I was speaking in a meeting and on forgiveness, and he had a lot of unforgiveness in his life. And it really just God worked in his life, it changed him around, and he was baptized and out there telling people about Christ. It's not my message, it's God's message of forgiveness, but I guess I'm the instrument, aren't I?
Very much so, and it is a very good movie, and obviously we admire so much about your family's life. As we finish up, Gladys, as people decide to watch The Least of These, if they haven't yet seen it, what do you hope that it leaves with them?
I guess I hope that forgiveness will be part of their lives, but certainly it'll help them to think about Christ and about forgiveness and why I was able to forgive, and it's only because God enabled me to forgive. But it's an ongoing, everyday thing, this forgiveness. You know, like Jesus said to Peter, now Peter asked, how many times will I forgive? 7 times? And he said, no, 70 times 7.
Mm.
Well, I don't think he meant us to count up to 490. But, yeah, it means it's continuous and ongoing. And, yeah, we need to stay close to God and just call on him.
Yeah, making those daily decisions. Gladys, thank you so much for your time today. I really appreciate it.
Thanks, Laura. Lovely to chat with you.
Thanks for listening. Start your day with Life Words. Subscribe to Hope 1032's free daily email devotional at hope1032.com.au.